Chapter 106. Takes up his candle and stalks off to bed, where feigning to be fast asleep, when the lady comes upstairs drowned in tears, murmuring lamentations over her hard fate and indistinct intentions of consulting her brothers, he undergoes the secret torture of hearing her exclaim between whiles, "I know there are only 14 doors in the house, I know it was Mr. Jenkins, I know he had a blue coat on, and I would say it as positively as I do now, if they were the last words I had to speak." Apostrophe, apostrophe, if the contradictory couple are blessed with children, they are not the less contradictory on that account. Master James and Miss Charlotte present themselves after dinner, and being in perfect good humor, and finding their parents in the same amiable state, augur from these appearances half a glass of wine apiece and other extraordinary indulgences. But unfortunately Master James, growing talkative upon such prospects, asks his mama how tall Mrs. Parsons is, and whether she is not 6 feet high, to which his mama replies, "Yes, she should think she was, for Mrs. Parsons is a very tall lady indeed, quite a giantess." Apostrophe, for heaven's sake, Charlotte, apostrophe, cries her husband, "do not tell the child such preposterous nonsense. 6 feet high." Apostrophe, "Well," replies the lady, "surely I may be permitted to have an opinion. My opinion is, that she is 6 feet high, at least 6 feet." Apostrophe, "Now you know, Charlotte," apostrophe, retorts the gentleman sternly, "that that is not your opinion, that you have no such idea, and that you only say this for the sake of contradiction." Apostrophe, "You are exceedingly polite," apostrophe, his wife replies, "to be wrong about such a paltry question as anybody's height would be no great crime, but I say again, that I believe Mrs. Parsons to be 6 feet more than 6 feet. Nay, I believe you know her to be full 6 feet, and only say she is not, because I say she is." Apostrophe, this taunt disposes the gentleman to become violent, but he cheeks himself, and is content to mutter, in a haughty tone, "6 feet, ha, ha. Mrs. Parsons 6 feet." Apostrophe, and the lady answers, "Yes, 6 feet. I am sure I am glad you are amused, and I'll say it again, 6 feet. Apostrophe, thus the subject gradually drops off, and the contradiction begins to be forgotten, when Master James, with some undefined notion of making himself agreeable, and putting things to rights again, unfortunately asks his mama what the moon's made of, which gives her occasion to say that he had better not ask her, for she is always wrong, and never can be right, that he only exposes her to contradiction by asking any question of her, and that he had better ask his papa, who is infallible, and never can be wrong. Papa, smarting under this attack, gives a terrible pull at the bell, and says, that if the conversation is to proceed in this way, the children had better be removed. Removed they are, after a few tears and many struggles, and Pa, having looked at Ma sideways for a minute or two, with a billful eye, draws his pocket handkerchief over his face, and composes himself for his after-dinner nap. The friends of the contradictory couple often deplore their frequent disputes, though they rather make light of them at the same time. Observing, that there is no doubt they are very much attached to each other, and that they never quarrel except about trifles. But neither the friends of the contradictory couple, nor the contradictory couple themselves, reflect, that as the most stupendous objects in nature are but vast collections of minute particles, so the slightest, and least considered trifles make up the sum of human happiness or misery. The couple who dote upon their children, have usually a great many of them. 6 or 8 at least. The children are either the healthiest in all the world, or the most unfortunate in existence. In either case, they are equally the theme of their doting parents, and equally a source of mental anguish and irritation to their doting parents' friends. The couple who dote upon their children recognize no dates, but those connected with their births, accidents, illnesses, or remarkable deeds. They keep a mental almanac with a vast number of innocence days, all in red letters. They recollect the last coronation, because on that day little Tom fell down the kitchen stairs. The anniversary of the gunpowder plot, because it was on the 5th of November that Ned asked whether wooden legs were made in heaven and cocked hats grew in gardens. Mrs. Whiffler will never cease to recollect the last day of the old year as long as she lives, for it was on that day that the baby had the four red spots on its nose which they took for measles. Nor Christmas Day, for 21 days after Christmas Day the twins were born. Nor Good Friday, for it was on a Good Friday that she was frightened by the donkey cart when she was in the family way with Georgina. The movable feasts have no motion for Mr. and Mrs. Whiffler, but remain pinned down tight and fast to the shoulders of some small child, from whom they can never be separated any more. Time was made, according to their creed, not for slaves, but for girls and boys. The restless sands in his glass are but little children at play. As we have already intimated, the children of this couple can know no medium. They are either prodigies of good health or prodigies of bad health. Whatever they are, they must be prodigies. Mr. Whiffler must have to describe at his office such excruciating agonies constantly undergone by his eldest boy, as nobody else's eldest boy ever underwent, or he must be able to declare that there never was a child endowed with such amazing health, such an indomitable constitution, and such a cast iron frame, as his child. His children must be, in some respect or other, above and beyond the children of all other people. To such an extent is this feeling pushed, that we were once slightly acquainted with a lady and gentleman who carried their heads so high, and became so proud after their youngest child fell out of a two pair of stairs window without hurting himself much, that the greater part of their friends were obliged to forego their acquaintance. But perhaps this may be an extreme case, and one not justly entitled to be considered as a precedent of general application. If a friend happen to dine in a friendly way with one of these couples who dote upon their children, it is nearly impossible for him to divert the conversation from their favorite topic. Everything reminds Mr. Whiffler of Ned, or Mrs. Whiffler of Mary Ann, or of the time before Ned was born, or the time before Mary Ann was thought of. The slightest remark, however harmless in itself, will awaken slumbering recollections of the twins. It is impossible to steer clear of them. They will come uppermost, let the poor man do what he may. Ned has been known to be lost sight of for half an hour, Dick has been forgotten, the name of Mary Ann has not been mentioned, but the twins will out. Nothing can keep down the twins. It's a very extraordinary thing, Saunders, apostrophe says Mr. Whiffler to the visitor, but you have seen our little babies, the twins? Apostrophe apostrophe the friend's heart sinks within him as he answers, oh, yes often. Apostrophe you're talking of the pyramids, apostrophe says Mr. Whiffler, quite as a matter of course, reminds me of the twins. It's a very extraordinary thing about those babies, what color should you say their eyes were? Apostrophe apostrophe upon my word, apostrophe the friend stammers, I hardly know how to answer the fact being, that except as the friend does not remember to have heard of any departure from the ordinary course of nature in the instance of these twins, they might have no eyes at all for aught he has observed to the contrary. You wouldn't say they were red, I suppose? Apostrophe apostrophe says Mr. Whiffler. The friend hesitates, and rather thinks they are, but inferring from the expression of Mr. Whiffler's face, that red is not the color, smiles with some confidence, and says, no, no. Very different from that. Apostrophe what should you say to blue? Apostrophe says Mr. Whiffler. The friend glances at him, and observing a different expression in his face, ventures to say, I should say they were blue, a decided blue. Apostrophe to be sure. Apostrophe cries Mr. Whiffler, triumphantly, I knew you would. But what should you say, if I was to tell you, that the boy's eyes are blue, and the girl's hazel, eh? Apostrophe apostrophe impossible. Apostrophe exclaims the friend, not at all knowing why it should be impossible. a fact, notwithstanding, apostrophe cries Mr. Whiffler. And let me tell you, Saunders, that's not a common thing in twins, or a circumstance that'll happen every day. Apostrophe, in this dialogue Mrs. Whiffler, as being deeply responsible for the twins, their charms and singularities, has taken no share, but she now relates, in broken English, a witticism of Little Dick's bearing upon the subject just discussed, which delights Mr. Whiffler beyond measure, and causes him to declare that he would have sworn that was Dick's, if he had heard it anywhere. Then he requests that Mrs. Whiffler will tell Saunders what Tom said about mad bulls, and Mrs. Whiffler relating the anecdote, a discussion ensues upon the different character of Tom's wit and Dick's wit, from which it appears that Dick's humor is of a lively turn, while Tom's style is the dry and caustic. This discussion being enlivened by various illustrations, lasts a long time, and is only stopped by Mrs. Whiffler instructing the footman to ring the nursery bell, as the children were promised that they should come down and taste the pudding. The friend turns pale when this order is given, and paler still when it is followed up by a great pattering on the staircase, not unlike the sound of rain upon a skylight. A violent bursting open of the dining room door, and the tumultuous appearance of six small children, closely succeeded by a strong nursery maid with a twin in each arm. As the whole eight are screaming, shouting, or kicking, some influenced by a ravenous appetite, some by a horror of the stranger, and some by a conflict of the two feelings, a pretty long space elapses before all their heads can be ranged round the table, and anything like order restored, in bringing about which happy state of things both the nurse and footman are severely scratched. At length Mrs. Whiffler is heard to say, apostrophe Mr. Saunders, shall I give you some pudding? Apostrophe apostrophe a breathless silence ensues, and 16 small eyes are fixed upon the guest in expectation of his reply. A wild shout of joy proclaims that he has said no, thank you. Apostrophe spoons are waved in the air, legs appear above the tablecloth in uncontrollable ecstasy, and 80 short fingers dabble in damson syrup. While the pudding is being disposed of, Mr. and Mrs. Whiffler look on with beaming countenances, and Mr. Whiffler, nudging his friend Saunders, begs him to take notice of Tom's eyes, or Dick's chin, or Ned's nose, or Mary Ann's hair, or Emily's figure, or little Bob's calves, or Fanny's mouth, or Carrie's head, as the case may be. Whatever the attention of Mr. Saunders is called to, Mr. Saunders admires, of course, though he is rather confused about the sex of the youngest branches and looks at the wrong children, turning to a girl, when Mr. Whiffler directs his attention to a boy, and falling into raptures with a boy, when he ought to be enchanted with a girl. Then the dessert comes, and there is a vast deal of scrambling after fruit, and sudden spurting forth of juice out of tight oranges in two infant eyes, and much screeching and wailing in consequence. At length it becomes time for Mrs. Whiffler to retire, and all the children are by force of arms compelled to kiss and love Mr. Saunders before going upstairs, except Tom, who, lying on his back in the hall, proclaims that Mr. Saunders is a naughty beast. Apostrophe and Dick, who having drunk his father's wine, when he was looking another way, is found to be intoxicated, and is carried out, very limp and helpless. Mr. Whiffler and his friend are left alone together, but Mr. Whiffler's thoughts are still with his family, if his family are not with him. Saunders, apostrophe says he, after a short silence, if you please, we'll drink Mrs. Whiffler and the children. Apostrophe Mr. Saunders feels this to be a reproach against himself for not proposing the same sentiment, and drinks it in some confusion. Ah! Apostrophe Mr. Whiffler sighs, these children, Saunders, make one quite an old man. Apostrophe Mr. Saunders thinks that, if they were his, they would make him a very old man, but he says nothing. And yet, apostrophe pursues Mr. Whiffler, what can equal domestic happiness? What can equal the engaging ways of children? Saunders, why don't you get married? Apostrophe now, this is an embarrassing question, because Mr. Saunders has been thinking that if he had at any time entertained matrimonial designs, the revelation of that day would surely have routed them forever. I am glad, however, apostrophe says Mr. Whiffler, that you are a bachelor, glad on one account, Saunders. A selfish one, I admit. Will you do Mrs. Whiffler and myself a favor? Apostrophe apostrophe Mr. Saunders is surprised, evidently surprised. But he replies, with the greatest pleasure. Apostrophe then, will you, Saunders? Apostrophe says Mr. Whiffler, in an impressive manner, will you cement and consolidate our friendship by coming into the family, so to speak, as a godfather? Apostrophe apostrophe I shall be proud and delighted. Apostrophe replies Mr. Saunders. Which of the children is it? Really, I thought they were all christened. Or apostrophe Saunders, apostrophe Mr. Whiffler interposes, they are all christened. You are right. The fact is, that Mrs. Whiffler is in short, we expect another. Apostrophe not a ninth. Apostrophe cries the friend, all aghast at the idea. Yes, Saunders, apostrophe rejoins Mr. Whiffler, solemnly, a ninth. Did we drink Mrs. Whiffler's health? Let us drink it again, Saunders, and wish her well over it. Apostrophe apostrophe, Dr. Johnson used to tell a story of a man who had but one idea, which was a wrong one. The couple who dote upon their children are in the same predicament. At home or abroad, at all times, and in all places, their thoughts are bound up in this one subject, and have no sphere beyond. They relate the clever things their offspring say or do, and weary every company with their prolixity and absurdity. Mr. Whiffler takes a friend by the button at a street corner on a windy day, to tell him a bon mot of his youngest boys, and Mrs. Whiffler, calling to see a sick acquaintance, entertains her with a cheerful account of all her own past sufferings and present expectations. In such cases the sins of the fathers indeed descend upon the children, for people soon come to regard them as predestined little bores. The couple who dote upon their children cannot be said to be actuated by a general love for these engaging little people, which would be a great excuse, for they are apt to underrate and entertain a jealousy of any children but their own. If they examined their own hearts, they would, perhaps, find at the bottom of all this, more self-love and egotism than they think of. Self-love and egotism are bad qualities, of which the unrestrained exhibition, though it may be sometimes amusing, never fails to be wearisome and unpleasant. Couples who dote upon their children, therefore, are best avoided. The cool couple. There is an old-fashioned weather glass representing a house with two doorways, in one of which is the figure of a gentleman, in the other the figure of a lady. When the weather is to be fine, the lady comes out and the gentleman goes in. When wet, the gentleman comes out and the lady goes in. They never seek each other's society, are never elevated and depressed by the same cause, and have nothing in common. They are the model of a cool couple, except that there is something of politeness and consideration about the behavior of the gentleman in the weather glass, in which neither of the cool couple can be said to participate. The cool couple are seldom alone together, and when they are, nothing can exceed their apathy and dullness, the gentleman being for the most part drowsy, and the lady silent. If they enter into conversation, it is usually of an ironical or recriminatory nature. Thus, when the gentleman has indulged in a very long yawn, and settled himself more snugly in his easy chair, the lady will perhaps remark, "Well, I am sure, Charles. I hope you're comfortable." Apostrophe to which the gentleman replies, "Oh yes, he's quite comfortable, quite." Apostrophe there are not many married men, I hope, apostrophe returns the lady, who seek comfort in such selfish gratifications as you do. Apostrophe nor many wives who seek comfort in such selfish gratifications as you do, I hope, apostrophe retorts the gentleman. Whose fault is that? Apostrophe apostrophe demands the lady. The gentleman becoming more sleepy, returns no answer. Whose fault is that? Apostrophe the lady repeats. The gentleman still returning no answer, she goes on to say that she believes there never was in all this world anybody so attached to her home, so thoroughly domestic, so unwilling to seek a moment's gratification or pleasure beyond her own fireside as she. God knows that, before she was married she never thought or dreamt of such a thing, and she remembers that her poor papa used to say again and again, almost every day of his life, "Oh, my dear Louisa, if you only marry a man who understands you, and takes the trouble to consider your happiness, and accommodate himself a very little to your disposition, what a treasure he will find in you." ... She supposes her papa knew what her disposition was. He had known her long enough, he ought to have been acquainted with it, but what? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.